The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment. You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.
Welcome back. We're in conversation with Dr. Ben Goldacre, author of the book Bad Science, physician, and also writes a column, a weekly column of the same name, Bad Science, in the Guardian newspaper in the UK. And Ben, I wanted to turn to, you mentioned the Durban Declaration, 5,000 researchers, this was in 2000, I believe, they agreed upon the relationship between the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV, the development of AIDS, the success of treating with antiretroviral medications, or ARVs. And so they come up with the statement in a way to respond to what President Mbeki said at the conference and what you mentioned earlier. Did the declaration sway the South African government in any way?
Oh, no, absolutely not at all. In fact, it's only really in the last 6 months since the new president of South Africa has been sworn in, and he's not a particularly nice guy either, that the South Africans have finally turned their back on AIDS denialism. So it's taken 10 years and the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people.
This is sort of a two-part issue. I want to deal with two groups now. One is called the Rath Foundation, and the other was the Treatment Action Campaign. So the first start off, what is the Rath Foundation? What is it? What is its mandate?
Well, the Rath Foundation is kind of Matthias Rath's international operation. I don't really know how his business is divided up, but if you're looking for Matthias Rath's adverts and his promotional materials and his claims, the Rath Foundation website is where you'll find it. They also, and actually, I really strongly recommend looking up Matthias Rath on the internet and reading through some of his own promotional material about himself. I think that speaks much more strongly mm-hmm. to the man than anything I could ever say about him. The Rath Foundation also, of course, in South Africa, was running clinics and also set up trials, one of which has now been declared illegal by the South African government. This was an extraordinary and really very large operation.
How did those clinics function, and what were they providing to people, and how were the studies actually conducted?
Well, it's very hard to find out in some respects. It's hard to find things on paper, and this is one of the things that came up in the prelude to the court case, because there were lots of people who were saying, people were signing affidavits saying that people had been told not to take their antiretroviral medication, and Matthias Rath was denying that this was the case. But essentially, these were clinics where Matthias Rath's ideas were put into practice, and they were being run, all over the shop. And there were people who were very, very worried about this in South Africa. So there were, letters signed by large numbers of doctors who were working out in, for example, in Western Cape. There was one letter signed by 199 medical practitioners saying, our patients are being inundated with propaganda, encouraging them to stop life-saving medication. Another quote from that, many of us have had experiences with HIV-infected patients who've had their health compromised by stopping their antiretrovirals due to the activity mm-hmm. of this foundation. Unfortunately, Matthias Rath's responses to this were to issue legal threats, like the one he issued against me. He even sued Médecins Sans Frontières. I mean, I think if you're ever looking for a quick rule of thumb to work out if you're on the wrong side in a discussion about healthcare, the morning that you wake up and find that you're suing MSF is a pretty good indicator.
Now, the United Nations has said something on record regarding his claims as well.
Well, he did, because he was running around saying that his activities were endorsed by this huge list of sponsors and affiliates, and he was claiming that the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and UNAIDS were all backing him up, and they issued statements flatly denouncing his claims and activities. But he he chunted on. He's got chutzpah, this guy, and that's another thing he shares with the alternative therapists that we see all over the place in our own countries, because he is one of those guys. It's just that he went off and took his kooky ideas to a place where where, as I said, 1,000,000,000 times, where the stakes were much, much, much higher. You know, but I mean, it's extraordinary the number of people who had to sort of run around after this guy, clearing up the old claims that he'd made. He took out a huge full page advert in the New York Times and the Herald Tribune, in which he would talk about the research that he'd done, or that he'd talk about how some research from Harvard Public Health Research Department backed up all his claims and had proved that, you know, vitamins were better than antiretroviral drugs. And it got so bad that these researchers were putting out press releases saying, look, that's not what our research found.
Right.
Our research found a really tiny benefit if you were having vitamin pills, but we didn't compare vitamin pills against antiretroviral drugs, and the changes were really modest, and this was in a really malnourished population. You know, I mean, it was just extraordinary, the sort of endless litany of misrepresentations.
Turning to the Treatment Action Campaign, can you talk about this particular group and its founder, Zaki Akhmet, who he was, what his goal was with regards to the Treatment Action Campaign, or TAC, and the response to it, both from the official circles, the government itself, and RATS Foundation's response to him?
Well, this is an extraordinary organization, the Treatment Action Campaign. They're the only people really in South Africa at the time who were talking sense. And they were fighting a war on four fronts. They were fighting against their own government because they were campaigning for people in South Africa to have access to antiretroviral medication. So they were fighting against their own AIDS denialist government. They were fighting against the pharmaceutical industry with its exploitative pricing practices, and they were actually taking direct action here. So this wasn't an organization that was just running around with billboards.
Mm-hmm.
They were smuggling drugs. They were running drugs over the border. They would get illegal gray import copycat drugs of things like fluconazole, and they would illegally import them into South Africa because their own government had refused to use, I don't know if you know, but there's a thing called the Doha Declaration, where you're allowed to say, look, we can't afford to pay the prices that the pharmaceutical industry are demanding. We've got a public health emergency here. We're going to make these drugs ourselves, or we're going to buy gray imports, and we're going to pay you a license that we feel we can afford. But the South African government refused to do that. So the Treatment Action Campaign said, okay, fine, you don't want to do that, but people are dying, so we're going to illegally import drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a, you know, this is a phenomenal, heroic organization, really.
Right.
They were also a grassroots treatment literacy campaign, because as I'm sure you know, a lot of the most important work in healthcare is about educating people and talking to people about prevention and the best thing they can do to keep themselves healthy and all of that. And it's 99% black women from townships, this organization, remember?
Right.
And then lastly, they were fighting against people like Matthias Rath, who were running around selling their miracle cures for AIDS. And it was headed by a guy called Zaki Akhmet. And Zaki Akhmet is, I think, probably the closest I have, to be honest, as a bit of a grumpy person to a hero. I mean, Zaki is an extraordinary, extraordinary human being. He was brought up in South Africa. He's colored by the crass, racist nomenclature of the apartheid regime, and he suffered under that, as you'd expect. At the age of 14, he tried to burn down his own school, and I think if you'd been in a similar situation, you can read about it on the internet, then you probably would have too. He was arrested under that brutal and torturous apartheid regime and endured everything that that implies, you know, and this is not mucking around, this stuff. He was also gay, he was also HIV positive, and he also began to develop full-blown AIDS. And Zaki, who was running the Treatment Action Campaign, campaigning for the government to give access to people with AIDS, to give them antiretroviral drugs, he refused to take life-saving antiretroviral medication, even though he was dying of AIDS, as a matter of principle, until it was available to everybody in the country. And this was despite the personal pleas on television by Nelson Mandela. I mean, this man is a huge, phenomenal national hero. But by Matthias Rath and the Rath Foundation and people associated with that, he was despised. And, I mean, it's kind of hard to imagine or believe or understand as an outsider, unless you know the full story, quite how much influence and power these AIDS denialists and the sort of vitamin pill lobby had in South Africa. And just to give you one window into
sure.
this, there's a Matthias Rath's right-hand man for a long period in South Africa was a man called Anthony Brunk, who runs a group called TIG, who kind of, you know, AIDS denialist organization. And he's a barrister, and he wrote this extraordinary document, which he sent to the War Crimes Tribunal of the International Criminal Court at The Hague. And he filed charges accusing Zaki Achmat of genocide for successfully campaigning to get access to HIV drugs for the people of South Africa who were dying without them. And you'd have thought that this would be laughable, but in South Africa, this was reported as a serious, proper news story in the national news media. Anthony Brunk is a man who's taken entirely seriously. In fact, Anthony Brunk takes the credit for introducing Thabo Mbeki to the ideas of AIDS denialism, just to give you a bit of perspective on, you know, how big and influential these people are. And people were reporting this 60-page-long document that Anthony Brunk, the barrister, sent to The Hague as if it was a sensible, you know, a serious piece of work. And I don't know if we've got time, but I could read you the last page of this document.
And in fact, that's exactly what I'd like to do, Ben. We're going to take a break, but I do want, in fact, if you weren't going to, I was going to. So when we come back, for our listeners, this is a document. It's entitled Appropriate Criminal Sanction. It is part of the document that was submitted to the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Very graphic, so I'm just going to warn you now. Very graphic, and think of this as a document that's been going to The Hague from this group. We're going to take a small break, and then Ben will be back. Dr. Goldacre will be back. He's going to read this to you. We're going to leave it at that, and when you listen to this, you'll get a really good idea of where this person, Brink, is coming from. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.